you and three of your colleagues went off and invented SNMP version 2. And you did it in a back room. You didn't do it in public. You didn't do it in a working group. And that was kind of unfair because you have a head start over everybody else and that you're rushing the process too much. Do you think we need to slow that process down or involve more people in the design of these things?
Well, to begin with, keep in mind that the four of us did exactly what we were asked to do by the IESG, which was to go off, form a design team, and do this.
Well, you had already started when that call for proposals came out, hadn't you?
Well, I could argue that I had started back in 1988 when I had finished SNMP version 1 as chair of that working group and was making my list of things to fix or things I couldn't get in version 1 that I wanted in version 2. So, I mean, in a sense, if you're saying, you know, you had already started, sure. And I would imagine anyone involved with version 1 had already started the day after version 1 got standardized. But, you know, let's keep in mind here that a call for proposals went out. Anyone was perfectly free to form their own design team and do this. But the only people who basically committed every free second of their time from March until July were the four of us, and we did the work. Now, is that unfair? You know, there are a lot of people who kind of complain that Marshall, or maybe Marshall and Jeff Case, kind of have a stranglehold on network management, that we're profiteers or robber barons or something like that. And I must admit, I do like being compared to a robber baron. There's a lot of kind of old 19th century romance associated with people who own railroads and, you know, and control millions of lives.
Although you're building one, not owning one, but that's okay.
Yeah, but regrettably, it's also not a very factual description of me, except, of course, I do kind of fit the physical caricature, but we won't go into that for now. But I have to learn to smoke cigars, of course, and appreciate fine brandies. Be that as it may, you know, the only reason that Jeff and I exert so much control in the world of SNMP is that Jeff and I, and also Keith and Steve, we simply put in more hours than anyone else. And this is an entirely democratic process. Someone wants to compete head-to-head with Marshall Rose or Jeff Case or Keith McClogger or Steve Walbusser, here's how you do it. You simply match us in quality and quantity of hours. You do that, and you'll be on an equal footing with us. But unless you're willing to make the investment of time and other resources, you know, you should expect to lose arguments. You know, in a lot of these things, in the working group, you know, people brought up proposals which we had thought of ourselves and, you know, and done an analysis of and then figured out one reason or another why it wouldn't work. And then they're surprised why we're against it and why we have all these arguments tailor-made as to why the proposal will fail. Well, gee, guys, we thought of that 6 months ago and decided that we couldn't make it happen. So it's you know, in a sense, this is really kind of an unfair thing. Now, you know, I should point out, of course, that the four of us do have an advantage because we do spend all this work, and that's our choice, and certainly people can compete with us. Similarly, you know, Jeff Case, in addition to being at the University of Tennessee at Knoxville, you know, he is also also president of SNMP Research, and he sells SNMP products for profit. You know, I have a book called The Simple Book, which is about SNMP, and I'm currently working on the second edition. And certainly, it's very much in my financial interest to have this SNMP V2 stuff finish so I can get the book on the shelves and make another killing. On the other hand, I'll also point out that there are easily 24 vendors participating in the SNMP V2 effort who basically have not done a lick of work in the working group towards adding to the quality of the SNMP V2 proposal, and yet they're going to make a ton of money when they sell SNMP V2 products. So, and they're, of course, interested in having this stuff come out as fast as it can as well. But no, I mean, you know, it's sure, of course I have an interest in this stuff. And in fact, I'll go so far as to say is that the people in the process I distrust the most are the ones who don't have any apparent interest. Because, you know, what's it for them whether this stuff is good or bad, whether this stuff gets advanced in a timely fashion or not? Those are the people I really worry about. You know,
well, what if they represent another segment, another group, another country, another protocol religion? Shouldn't they be in that, or do you think you should just deploy the technology as quickly as possible?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, you can only standardize on stuff that you have. You can only standardize and be successful on technology which works and people are willing to build products to. You know, certainly we have tried to meet as many of the industry's requirements as we can SNMP V2, and there are some requirements where basically we just had to say, sorry, you can't have that. And, you know, and in cases like that, basically it comes down to adding that particular feature would have a detrimental effect on the overall operation of the system. And this is an engineering trade-off, and you have to decide whether you want to make things run or whether you want to make sure that everyone has their apple juice and cookies at the end of the day. And I'm sorry, you know, we're here to make the trains run. We're not here to hand out apple juice and cookies.
Well, I can think of another instance where a similar decision was faced by the IAB.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking at the routing and addressing crisis, and they said, we've got a train to run. And they decided, at least on a direction for IP version 7. And the community didn't react nearly as favorable. What is the difference between pushing SNMP v2 out because it needs to be done and pushing, let's say, a connectionless network service out as IPv7?
Well, the thing to keep in mind is that the SNMP v2 effort did not get its push until the July meeting of the IETF in Cambridge, when there was, one of the meetings at the plenary where over 200 people showed up, you know, heard the proposal, and then, you know, as a body, they said, do this now, make it happen, let's go. Now, from my perspective, when you have 200 people willing to show up at an IETF meeting and sit in the same room and listen for 3 hours to a proposal, and then after some questions and answers, basically have virtually everyone in the room point to exactly the same goal, that's a mandate. In the case of the IPv7 thing, the problem we have is that everyone agrees there's a problem. We disagree as to the extent of the problem, whether it is a clear danger or a present danger, and we certainly disagree on what the solutions are. So there is no clear mandate. And so for the IAB or anybody to say, okay, this is what we're going to do, without having that mandate, they certainly open themselves up to just being in a tremendous pressure cooker, and that's where they found themselves.
Now, the result of that pressure cooker was an effort called POISED, which examined how we govern ourselves in the IETF.
Mm-hmm.
What's your feeling on what's happened with the POISED efforts? You were one of the authors of the compromise proposal at the IETF, where it was decided to have a random selection committee and a change in the roles of the IAB and the IESG. Have we fixed things? Are we ready to settle down and get back to work?
Well, the outcome of POISED was to try and introduce a level of accountability into the selection process, and basically an advise and consent kind of role between the rank and file and the management structure. And what we came out of that, basically a volunteer pool a pool of volunteers randomly selected to make recommendations, which then the management structure can approve or deny, probably is the best compromise that could have been worked. And I think in the long term, it's probably going to serve us very well. I think what we're going to end up seeing is more new blood coming into the system at a time when we really start to need it. You know, one of the problems we had with the old system is kind of being self-selecting. While the quality of the individuals was good, we just didn't have a way of grooming our junior people into becoming senior people. And what my hope is now is that we're going to start getting some of the people who are working group chairs are going to start becoming area directors. People who are area directors are either going to move on to the IAB or perhaps into some other position. And then new working group chairs will come in. So we'll kind of like start to build up more of a collection of people who have internet management experience. And I think we have to start doing this because, you know, a lot of the people we have now in the senior positions are, for better or worse, are nearing retirement, and they just don't quite have, you know, the energy that they used to. And, you know, furthermore, you know, we have to keep in mind that as we are ever expanding and growing, we have new constituencies. We need to provide an outlet so those new constituencies, you know, feel that they have adequate representation and so on, and that their views are known. Now, having said all that, there are some things that we absolutely must avoid. The thing which we must avoid is any concept of participation via affiliation. That is, oh, I'm the representative from company XYZ, or I represent the European, the Scandinavian portion of the internet or something
like
that.
But these are the people that are often paying to send these people to the committees. And so IBM pays IBM employees. Shouldn't IBM as a corporation have a voice?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I'd argue that no corporation nor any organization have a voice as a part of their corporate entity or identity. No, that's just wrong. I mean, if you do that, you will immediately find yourself devolving into the ISO/ANSI/OIW way of doing things, which would just be absolute disaster. Companies which send people to the IETF do so because they have a financial reason for having people there. Sometimes they have people there for education purposes. Sometimes they have people there to push an agenda. Sometimes they have people there because they view it as a matter of community service. And certainly it's this latter aspect which I would like to encourage, people to kind of view their participation in the IETF is a matter of community service. The fact that you shouldn't view being on the IESG or the IAB as a reward, you should rather review it as 2 years of 2 years of community service. You know, not unlike many countries which require all able-bodied adults to serve in the military from time to time as a reservist or on standby or something like that. We need to view these management positions the same way, and we certainly shouldn't view it as well, you know, I'm from Corporation XYZ.
Don't touch that mouse. Internet Talk Radio will be right back.